Good morning, and thank you, Dr. Curtis. Since HPV vaccine was licensed in 2006, ongoing clinical trials have produced a substantial amount of additional data, and these data have led to new recommendations for use of HPV vaccines. And the purpose of my talk this morning is really to give an overview of some of the new data and existing data and to provide an update on ACIP recommendations for vaccine use. First, I'm just going to give a brief background. I think everyone knows there's over 100 different types of HPV that have been identified, and about 40 of these types are sexually transmitted. These include so-called high-risk or oncogenic types such as 16 and 18 that cause cervical cancer and other anogenital cancers, and a subset of oral and oral pharyngeal cancers, and low-risk types such as HPV 6 and 11 that cause genital warts and recurrent respiratory papillomatosis. The majority of cervical cancers worldwide are attributable to just two types, 16 and 18, and each of the other types of HPV shown in red on this slide of the high-risk types are responsible for a smaller percentage of cervical cancers. And of course, this is why the vaccine manufacturers have targeted their vaccines to HPV 16 and 18. Now, there's two vaccines that are now licensed for use in the U.S. The quadrivalent vaccine, this is directed at four HPV types, two oncogenic types, 16 and 18, and two low-risk types, 6 and 11. And the bivalent vaccine, which is directed against two types, 16 and 18. Both vaccines are given in a three-dose series. And the quadrivalent vaccine is produced by Merck, also known as Gardasil. This vaccine was licensed in 2006 for use in females 9 to 26 years of age, and was licensed at the end of 2009 for use in males in the similar age group. And the bivalent vaccine produced by GlaxoSmithKline, also known as Cervarix, was licensed at the end of 2009, and it was licensed for use in females 10 to 25 years of age. Now, just to go over some of the recommendations, the chronology of this, and then I'm going to go back into some detail about the data to support these. In 2006, after licensure, the quadrivalent vaccine was recommended for routine use in girls 11 or 12 years of age and catch-up vaccination through 26 years of age. And then, as I mentioned, at the end of last year, the bivalent vaccine was licensed for use in females, and the quadrivalent vaccine was licensed for use in males. After licensure of the bivalent vaccine, a recommendation was made for either use of either vaccine for females 11 or 12 years of age and catch-up for females 13 through 26, so the same recommendations as originally were made in 2006. And the quadrivalent vaccine for males, guidance was given for use of this vaccine, stating that the vaccine may be used for males 9 to 26, but a routine recommendation was not made. So let me focus first on the female recommendation and provide a little more detail about the differences between these two vaccines. Both vaccines are virus-like particle vaccines made from the L1 surface protein of the virus, and they're very similar in that way, but they have some different attributes. I discussed previously that they actually are directed at different types. One is directed against four types, the other two. The antigens used in the vaccines are both produced using recombinant technology, but the producer cells are different for the two vaccines. And the adjuvants in the vaccines are also different. One vaccine, the quadrivalent, contains alum, which is an adjuvant available for use in other vaccines in the U.S. The bivalent vaccine uses AS04, which is a new adjuvant. This adjuvant was shown to enhance the immune response to the VLPs early in the clinical development. Both vaccines, again, are given in a three-dose series, and the timing of the second dose is slightly different for the two vaccines. Both manufacturers had very large clinical development programs, and this shows just part of them. The phase two efficacy trials in females were conducted in 16 to 23 or 15 to 25-year-old females, and then the larger pivotal phase three trials were conducted in similar-aged women to look at the endpoint that was used for licensure, which is cervical intraepithelial neoplasia. And the mean time for follow-up to date for the phase two and phase three studies I've listed on the slide. Both manufacturers also conducted bridging adolescent immunogenicity and safety studies to bridge the antibody results from the efficacy trials in the older females. And then efficacy and immunogenicity studies are being done in older women. And while the trials were very similar from the two companies, they used different study populations, control groups, and assays to look at immunological parameters in PCR. And so some aspects of the trials are difficult to compare directly between the two vaccines. This slide shows efficacy data for the two vaccines. Both vaccines have been found to have very high efficacy for protection against the primary endpoint in the per protocol population. This is the population of women who received all three vaccine doses and were naive to the vaccine types that were being evaluated. As you can see, the efficacy for the bivalent vaccine was 93% for 16-18 related cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, grade 2 or higher, and it was high also individually for the 16-18 related endpoints. And for the efficacy of the quadrivalent vaccine, this was 98% and also high individually for 16-18 related endpoints. For the quadrivalent vaccine, we also have data for endpoints for vaginal and vulvar precancer lesions, VIN and VEIN, as well as condyloma or genital warts, and you can see very high efficacy for both of these endpoints as well. Now, some data suggest the vaccines may provide protection against high-risk types other than those that are in the vaccines. This is called cross-protection. And the types that have been examined are those that are phylogenetically related to HPV 16 and 18. And it's been somewhat difficult to assess the extent of cross-protection because some of the lesions actually have more than one type in them and they're co-infected with vaccine types. But data do suggest that the bivalent vaccine may have more cross-protection than the quadrivalent vaccine. But again, direct comparisons are difficult because of some of the differences in the assays and the way the studies were conducted. Pre-licensure trials, I just want to mention this briefly, had for the bivalent vaccine, since it's the newer vaccine, had an extensive safety assessment done, looking for a variety of things listed on this slide. There was a pooled safety evaluation from 11 clinical trials involving more than 30,000 females, and a meta-analysis of autoimmune events from trials containing the adjuvant ASO4, including HPV as well as other vaccine trials that have this adjuvant. While injection site reactions were more common in vaccinees than controls, severe adverse events and potential autoimmune disorders, which you can see on this slide, were no different between vaccinees and the control group. Now, as I mentioned, there are some aspects of these trials which were different, and the assays were different, so it's hard to directly compare the two vaccines, but there has been one trial conducted by GSK that directly compared the bivalent and the quadrivalent vaccine. This was a safety and immunogenicity trial, and the same assay was used to determine antibody titers for both vaccines. And you can see in this slide, in green is Cervarix, and in yellow is Gardasil, and in this study, Cervarix did produce higher antibody titers after vaccine than Gardasil. However, both vaccines produce antibody titers that are substantially higher than those after natural infection, so the clinical significance of this finding is really unclear. This slide now is going to summarize our general feeling about the different vaccines and their attributes and how they might compare. First, both vaccines have very high efficacy against 16 and 18 related precancer lesions, and the quadrivalent vaccine also has demonstrated efficacy against vaginal and vulvar precancers. The quadrivalent vaccine also has very high efficacy for protection against 6 and 11 related genital warts. Both vaccines appear to have some cross-protection against non-vaccine types, and there may be some differences in this cross-protection, with the bivalent having cross-protection against types related to 16 and possibly 18, and the quadrivalent having some cross-protection possibly against 16. Seroconversion, which I didn't review, but is very high in all vaccinees that have been examined to date. And as I mentioned, data from the comparative trials show that the titers after the bivalent vaccine are higher than those after the quadrivalent vaccine. The duration of protection looks very good for both vaccines, and at this time, it's unclear if there's any differences in duration of protection. local reactogenicity, I didn't present this, but Dr. Slade will present this in her study, looks to be higher after the bivalent than the quadrivalent vaccine. The cost of the vaccines right now, I've listed on this slide, in the private sector and through the CDC contract are very similar, slightly lower for the bivalent than the quadrivalent vaccine. At the October ACIP meeting, the ACIP reviewed a variety of data, some of which I've shown to you, and they took a neutral approach to the two vaccines, keeping the existing recommendation for routine vaccination of girls at 11 or 12 years of age and catch up in females age 13 to 26 who have not been previously vaccinated or completed the series, and stated that vaccination with either the bivalent or the quadrivalent vaccine is recommended for prevention of cervical cancers and precancers, and vaccination with the quadrivalent vaccine is recommended for prevention of cervical cancers, precancers, and genital warts. Of course, this leaves the decision about which vaccine to use up to providers, purchasers of the vaccines, and patients, and there will be challenges, and there are challenges, related to communication and understanding the differences between the two vaccines. I want to touch briefly on some other aspects of the recommendation that was made. There was an attempt to harmonize the age group, the dosing intervals, and the mineral intervals to minimize confusion. And the ACIP did recommend that both vaccines are given as a three-dose schedule. It can be given as young as 9 years of age and as through age 26. And this is a little different than the indication age for the bivalent vaccine, which was licensed for 10 to 25 years of age. For both vaccines, the second dose should be administered 1 to 2 months after the first dose, and the third dose 6 months after the first, and the minimal intervals between the vaccine doses was also harmonized. For interchangeability of vaccines, of course, as with other vaccines, ACIP recommends the same product be used for the entire vaccination series, but there will be situations where people either don't know or the provider would not have available the vaccine product that was used previously. And in that situation, either vaccine product could be used to complete the series to provide protection against 16 and 18. For precautions and contraindications, I want to just briefly mention that the vaccines are not recommended for use in pregnant women, but testing is not required before vaccination. Any exposure should be reported to registries, and there's a different registry for each vaccine. And the vaccines are contraindicated for persons with immediate hypersensitivity reaction. For the quadrivalent vaccine, this means yeast, and for the bivalent vaccine, for the prefilled syringes, just means latex allergy. Now, let me move on to the second issue that came up in October, and that was the issue of HPV vaccine for males, specifically the quadrivalent vaccine. Males have a similar prevalence of HPV infection compared to females. And the burden of disease related to HPV includes cancers, genital warts, RRP, and the cancers include anal, penile, oral cavity, and oropharyngeal cancers. And transmission is high between sex partners of HPV. We also know that men who have sex with men have a greater burden of HPV-related outcomes. For example, cancer, which is about 2 per 100,000 in the general population of males, is about 35 per 100,000 in HIV-negative MSM. This slide shows the cancers that are due to HPV, associated with HPV in both females and males. And you can see that while the burden of HPV-related cancers is higher in males, and some of the cancers related to HPV in men are quite rare in the United States. Data on the efficacy of the quadrivalent vaccine are available, and this was from a trial of about 3,000 heterosexual males and 600 men who have sex with men. And the primary objective was HPV-related external genital lesions, and that was in the main study. And in the sub-study of MSM, precancer lesions were also evaluated. Interim data that were available at the time of the October ACIP meeting showed high efficacy for prevention of genital warts, 89%. And based on these data, FDA licensed the vaccine for use in males with an indication specifically for prevention of 6 and 11 related genital warts. When considering recommendations in males, the ACIP reviewed a variety of data, including vaccine efficacy that was available at that time, data on epidemiology and the burden of disease in males, and programmatic issues and cost effectiveness. And of note, for cost effectiveness, a variety of studies have shown that the cost effectiveness of male vaccination depends on a variety of assumptions, of course, that go into the models, and that male vaccination is most effective, cost effective, when coverage among females is low, when all potential health outcomes are included in the models, and of course, when vaccine efficacy is high. This slide shows data from one of the cost effectiveness analyses that was evaluated, showing the cost effectiveness ratios for HPV vaccination in the US, and particularly highlighting the impact of different disease outcomes that were included in the model. And there's different colored bars here. The light blue represents model that only included cervical cancer, and the green bar includes the model that incorporated all HPV-related outcomes. The set of bars on the far left is for female vaccination only, and the set of bars on the right shows the cost-effectiveness of adding males to the vaccination program. And remember, the lower the bar, the more cost-effective the strategy. And in the U.S., cost-effectiveness estimates of about $50,000 per quality are generally accepted as cost-effective, and you can see that most of the estimates for the male vaccination lie outside of this range. I do want to point out that this model assumes coverage of 75% in females, and if the coverage is lower, the cost-effectiveness estimates for male vaccination would be considerably more favorable than are shown in this graph. And I want to remind people what coverage is in the U.S. at this time among females. This data is from the National Immunization Survey 2007-2008, showing coverage in 13 to 17-year-old females was about 25% in 2007 and 37% in 2008. And this is, I should say, initiation. This is not coverage with three doses. So coverage right now in the U.S. is substantially lower than what the models have been using to look at cost-effectiveness of male vaccination. Now, as I mentioned before, ACIP provided guidance, and the discussions around the guidance centered on the issues that there were a lot of programmatic challenges at the state and local level around HPV vaccine related to financing, that most of the burden of diseases and cancers related to HPV was in females, and that the priority should be given to vaccinating females to reduce the overall burden of disease and cancers and to try to increase coverage in females, and that there were a variety of outstanding issues for future consideration. These included the efficacy for prevention of anal intraepithelial neoplasia, which is the precancer lesion in males, cost-effectiveness in men who have sex with men, since that's a group that would potentially have greater benefit from the vaccine, and the vaccine price. Of course, if the vaccine price is lower, that definitely changes all the cost-effectiveness models. The quadrivalent vaccine, the guidance that was given in October was that quadrivalent vaccine may be given to males age 9 through 26 to reduce their likelihood of acquiring genital warts, and ideally the vaccine should be administered before exposure to HPV through sexual contact. And the vaccine was also included in the Vaccines for Children's program in October, enabling providers to provide vaccine to eligible males 9 through 18 years of age. Now, since the October discussion about HPV, additional data are now available from vaccine trials in that subset of men who have sex with men. And this shows that there is efficacy against the precancer lesion of anal intraepithelial neoplasia. Efficacy was 98% for any AIN, and 78% and 75% against the high-grade lesion AIN-2-3. And these data have been submitted to FDA and are being reviewed at this time. Based on these, there's going to be likely further consideration of the vaccine for males. There'll be a review of the efficacy data, cost-effectiveness analyses with different efficacy assumptions now that we actually have data on efficacy against AIN, as well as different coverage assumptions. Programmatic issues will be discussed again. Epidemiology and cost-effectiveness of HPV vaccine in men who have sex with men and of course the feasibility of reaching MSM when they would benefit most from vaccination. Last, I want to just mention briefly quadrivalent vaccine for women older than 26 years of age. Trials have been conducted in this age group, specifically in 24 to 45 years of age. This has been discussed at ACIP as well, and issues that have been discussed are the relatively small impact of vaccination of adult women, incidence of new infections decreases with increasing age, and of course the percentage of women with previous infection who may not benefit from vaccination increases. And models that have looked at this have shown high cost per quality for vaccination of women as age increases. So just in summary, ACIP recommendations were first made in 2006, and they were updated in October of 2009. There are two vaccines for females 9 through 26 years. Either vaccine is recommended for the recommended age groups, routine and catch-up. And the quadrivalent vaccine right now may be given to males 9 through 26, but there's no routine recommendation. But there will be a substantial amount of new data that will be reviewed in the coming year, and we anticipate future policy issues addressing both the quadrivalent vaccine in males and the HPV vaccine for women over age 26. Thank you. I